Welcome to episode 13 of the Wonder and Awe podcast. I'm Louis Schwartzberg. I'm going to be your host. And many of you know me from the films I make that celebrate life, because I love making the invisible visible by taking viewers on journeys through time and scale. My work always tries to combine the how of science and the why of art. And I've always seen Wonder and Awe as that intersection between art and science. And this podcast is all about that. Because what I've learned over many years of personal experience in filmmaking is that being immersed in nature increases our capacity for courage, creativity, kindness, and compassion. All the things we need to create a world that is sustainable for life to flourish. That's why I'm proud that today's podcast is supported by the Fetzer Institute. They help build a spiritual foundation for a loving world. Fetzer's new study, What Does Spirituality Mean to Us?, reveals how spirituality informs our understanding of ourselves and each other and inspires us to take action for the common good. I want to also invite you to share your questions for our guests throughout the podcast. Our team will be reading them and we'll get to as many as we can. My guest today is a dear friend who's been redefining the wellness experience for decades and is one of the global leaders on wellness in the world. Anna Burstrom is owner of Raison d'Etre, I hope I said that right, founding board member of the Global Wellness Summit, and wellness pioneer at Six Senses Hotel Resorts and Spas, one of the most exclusive luxury wellness spas in the world. I'm happy to welcome Anna to the podcast. Anna, how you doing?
I am good, thank you. How are you, Louis?
I'm doing really good. This is a joy to be able to have a conversation with you. We've known each other for a while as we've both been keynote presenters at the Global Wellness Summit. And I've always loved the fact that you are definitely a pioneer, a true edge runner. I think we've always been pushing the envelope with the crowd, talking about things that are a little bit on the edge, whether it's shamanism or psychedelics. And at a time when it was a little unusual, but now it's becoming more mainstream. So let me just start off by asking you, because I know that you've got this incredible blend of, you know, business expertise, right? I think you have a master's in business, right? MBA.
Yeah.
But you're also, I love the fact that you've got like a foot in another world. I think you also are a modern day shaman. How do you bridge both worlds?
I think it's been one of my gifts, and especially early in this industry, is that you need to be able to talk the language of the finance people, the money, because in many ways, and up until now, people and businesses have been led more by finance. But in order to also bridge the wellness and the spiritual and the emotional world, you have to also understand that world. So it's kind of having one foot in both. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more and more in the world coming into the camp of kind of, and I've always seen my duty on earth, so to speak, for this lifetime at least, is to be the bridge between, so to speak, the visible and the invisible world, just as you are, I think. So I think it's and it's also shown in the later years that shamanism, energy medicine, quantum physics and all this, it all comes together and it actually just puts a whole picture instead of part of the picture that sometimes only the visible world does.
Tell us more about energy medicine. What do you mean by that?
Well, energy medicine, I mean, if we look at, it's been around, if we look at our science, we've had our science for maybe 300 years. And you have other sciences that we know today, like TCM and Ayurveda. They've been around for thousands of years. Now, our science generally just try to separate things from the whole and look at things in isolations and only things that we can see. Where we see TCM and Ayurveda, for instance, are looking at more of the holistical. We use the energy meridians, so to speak, in both of those science. So it's a greater picture, but it's still not the whole picture. When one looks at energy medicine, and this is where our indigenous people around the world, our shamans, all of these people, and they've literally had the same system. Whether you are in northern Sweden and the Sami people or the Aborigines in Australia, and never spoken to each other, they use the same energy meta system. And what it generally is that you tap into what we call the matrix or the field. And some in quantum physics is called the Higgs field. And when you tap into this, and I think Tesla actually said that memories are not neurons in your brain. It's actually the neurons are antennas to the field. So we can actually listen to the memories and what's being said. We also have that beautiful thing, and just to explain energy medicine a bit more and the field and the quantum physics, is that we invented fire on Earth in this different places without no means of communication about the same time. So on one side of the world and the other at the same time, because when one invented it, it became part of the field. And if you have your antennas up to the field, you can pick that up. So what happens is, as a shaman in energy medicine, is that you basically have greater antennas to the field. You've been taught on how you can speak with the field. And to complicate matters a bit more, because in our world, time is not linear. Time and space, we've made up ourselves as a human factor. And it actually doesn't work. So we have to add a day, for instance, in the yearly calendar. So we look at time as stacked. So like if you have picture frames on a stack, so it can be stacked. So you can also, when you tap into the field, you can go to the future and you can go to past lives. And you can heal things both from the future and from past lives. So he's basically tapping into the field, which is not defined by time and space or gravity. And quantum physics says about the same thing. So they're trying to explain it with some kind of new physicism. But that is energy medicine, is basically tapping into that field through a number of ways. It could be indigenous neo-shamanism, or it could be healing or Reiki or crystals. There's a lot of different ways on how you can tap into that field.
In filming nature, I see that all the time. You know, like when you see like a school of fish, they all make a left turn and a right turn. You know, obviously they're not like signaling each other. They do it at the same moment. They must be tapping into something higher. The same thing with a flock of birds, right? You can just see them just go right, left. I mean, hundreds of them, thousands at a time. So I think that's just another example from what I've observed. I also think that artists have an antenna that's kind of up in the air. Being able to predict the future, you know, being able to, you know, if you look at art, it'll always predict dark times and good times, you know, culturally. And I feel that that's kind of one of the gifts what artists, you know, bring to the table, is being able to kind of foresee what might be happening in the future. So,
I can ask you a question, Louise, because when you're in nature filming, and what we also say that intuition is something that is tapping into the field. We can't really explain intuition in today's physical world. So you must have seen that many times when you have taken a decision because of what your intuitive says, that I want to go to that direction, I want to go here, I want to do this. Do you have any of those stories? Because that's also tapping into the field.
Definitely. Well, especially with time lapse, because if you're shooting like a flower opening, well, it's a bud. So I have this intuition that like days from now, it'll fill the frame in a certain way. So my composition is based on that. Or if I'm outdoors looking at the clouds, you know, I have to be present to kind of observe what direction are the clouds moving? Where is the sun going to go down? Where will it be 2 or 3 hours from now? So the beautiful part of that, it certainly makes me present, which is great. But the intuition of thinking that those clouds are either going to dissipate, or they're going to form, they're going to get stormier, or they're going to, you know, metamorphosize in a certain way, that's all based on intuition. I think that, yeah, another analogy, because I like to boogie board a lot, it's kind of like, you know, being a surfer, and where do you have to be to catch the wave? You know, you're just looking out at the ocean, you don't know, but there is a certain magic to being in the right spot at the right time, at the right place, and in order to catch the wave. And that's just, I think, a matter of tuning into the field.
It's exactly that. And then talking about energy medicine, going a bit deeper, is what we can do who's practiced, or a lot of people can do, everyone can do it if you study and go deep and get, and I mean, for shamans, you get the initiations, but there's other ways to do it as well, is that you can direct energy, you can alleviate energy. Because what we also say that when we're stressed, we have imprints in our physical body. We can get backache, we can get shoulder ache and stuff like that. When we have a trauma, it makes imprint, and we can have a massage and then the stress goes away, or the symptom at least. Now we can have a trauma in our childhood, or right now we're living in a traumatic world, and that actually puts imprint in our information field, our electromagnetical field. And that's where we can go and tap into that field and take away that imprint that potentially has hindered you to live fully. And it could be something from your childhood that happened. That memory is affecting you in a way that you cannot live fully. So we can go in and look at that and then take away that energy around that memory, and then it doesn't bother you any longer. So those are things that one can do in a variety of ways when one works with energy medicine. And it makes it really, really interesting in how we can put back pieces of your soul, or you can take away things that doesn't serve you.
So Anna, I don't know if I shared it with you, but like just last week, we're doing a clinical trial at St. John's where we are combining my visual healing films, Nature's Patterns, with a psilocybin dose to treat alcohol addiction. And so that's another way of opening up people to a trauma, because I'm assuming when people have some type of an addiction, it's like they're not taking care of themselves, or they're not involved with self-love, you know? And so do you think that the idea of psychedelics having this renaissance right now can maybe find a home in the wellness industry?
I think it has. It will take some time before it's legal. It already starting to have a home in the wellness industry. I mean, for us, I mean, now we're suddenly snowing in a shaman, but I'm as much a scientist and an entrepreneur. But for me, as we obviously experiment with everything from San Pedro to ayahuasca to psilocybins, and it is a way to connect in a very quick way with that field. And I think it also connects you with everything that is, the DMT, so to speak, the cell that are a God molecule, if we call it that way, which combines everything living. So I think what happens is that you get this understanding that you are connected to something bigger, that you're connected to Mother Earth, that this whole separation of everyone for themselves is actually not correct. We are a we on Earth, and actually unity and living in harmony is what we need to do. So I think psilocybins is probably my favorite, because it is soft and gentle and lovely, and being in nature heightens whatever effect you get from it. And you can also use it in so many different ways, in certain terms of microdosing or everything in between. I think I've done every step in between for different purposes, and it's wonderful that you can do that. You can have it instead. It's much better than drinking alcohol. Not that I tell everyone to go out and party on psilocybins, but it truly opens up to that world that is connecting us all and to that matrix. And then you can suddenly, because you've not been able to see how beautiful it is. And I also think it's I've seen it sometimes with near-death experiences as well, is that the same thing happens like in psilocybins. And I've studied that for a bit because I had a near-death experience when I was 14 and died. And so I've studied it a bit and seen that it's literally the same thing. You get an insight on how beautiful and amazing and what a gift this life is, and how we should cherish it and be grateful instead of thinking of everything we do not have. And I think psilocybins is the same thing.
Well, that's what I discovered when I did the filming sequences at Johns Hopkins with, you know, cancer patients that had a severe diagnosis. I think one of the beautiful things I heard them say was that they lost their fear of dying from having this, you know, incredible mystical experience. And what's great is that the two patients that I interviewed are still alive. And I feel that eliminating that anxiety, that mental, you know, anguish about, you know, what happens when you die? Where do you go? What happens to you? Which is like the ultimate existential question, complicates the fact they've got this physical malady going on, this cancer that's happening. And so I think that in and of itself is a giant benefit to help people heal. What do you think?
My view is, and we haven't seen this in science yet, but we see that psilocybins can heal psychological trauma for sure, PTSD. I also believe that it can heal actual physical ailments, but that's my personal belief, so it's no scientific data. But what we know is that, and we've seen that for too many spontaneous healings and other stories in the world and anecdotal stories, although there's no science behind it, is that suddenly people get healed. And often it is when they release a trauma, release an emotion. We've come to understand that even cancer and other horrible diseases are actually energy collections in our body, often due to things that has happened to us or how we act, our attitude to the world. So mm-hmm. by taking this psilocybins, you can open up and release not only psychologically traumas that you have, but I think also physical traumas that has then been manifested in your body as some type of disease of some sort. So I think that, and of course, I mean, whatever you do, even if you take that, you have to also take care of your body. So my job is in wellness. So, you know, if you hit a hammer in your head, no matter what you do, you're still going to get a headache or more. So you also have to take care of your environment and your wellness and your health and all those things. But I do believe that psilocybins cannot heal only psychological traumas, but also physical traumas.
It also taught me, I think, how to become present. You know, I think when people have the, you know, psychedelic experience, it's, you know, a dissolution of ego. And for some people, that can be scary, you know, and for others that meditate, for example, it's very familiar territory. So I'm curious, because I think this Wonder and Awe podcast for me is all about how do you become present? And for me, it's like that intersection between art and science, being in the moment, being able to observe from a scientific point of view, observe with a blank slate, with an open mind, to be able to collect data, to figure out, you know, how things work. And perhaps from a scientific point of view, a little bit more in terms of why it works, kind of more of a spiritual look at it. So I'm curious, how do you go from a reactive mindset to a creative mindset? How does one become more open-minded in terms of the wellness practices that you work on?
We live in a world of duality where there's good and bad, black and white and so forth. But we're ultimately in a world of love. And the trajectory of each person for themselves have been extremely prevalent in recent years. And for life to become more evenly balanced, it has to change, I think. And this is where love comes into place, because what we're talking about, reactive and open mindset, it's this fear-based society that we're in. And actually, if one look at the science of fear, you have the amygdala back here. So when we listen to the news and hear all the fear around us, it is not a conscious or a rational reaction that we have. Fear is back here. It's a reptile brain. So we immediately get into a state which is much more heightened than love, because fear is a warning. It's like a lion is coming. We got to run. And that's when we hear the news. So I think one way is you have to detox from all the fear-based information around you. I think that's one really important factor. But also love. Love comes into play. The heart actually is the first organ to form when the body is developing in utero. And the heart is then the connection between all future system, which compromise the body. So this is our center of our being. And we can use the heart as a doorway between physical and non-physical reality. I think it's the main doorway between soul and your physical body. But it's also the main doorway of being in fear and being reactive instead of going to the heart. You can get into that creative mindset. And a lot of the mindfulness practices help you to connect with the heart. Psilocybins for sure does it. Energy medicine and just connecting with the field. When we're in love, life is glorious. And you don't need to be in love with any person. You can be in love with life, yourself, with nature. You're in love with nature. And we can choose to be in love at all times during the day. And this is how we can come into the creative mindset. And life just transforms, because when you're in love, you suddenly have the answers within you. And when you dumb it down with sugar, alcohol, TV, and media, you really lose the connection. So I think one of the most important thing, and then there's methods that you can do to get out from fear, like curiosity and acceptance and surrender and all these things. But ultimately, I think to be open, you need to connect with your heart. And that is, and when you connect with your heart, you suddenly become creative.
Yeah. I think your brain neurons are definitely signals from the heart that communicate to the brain. I've heard that, like, when you walk into a room, is it heart rate variability, where you instantly, there can be, like, let's say a dozen people in a gathering, and instantly you will gravitate to a certain person based on kind of feeling the synchronicity of their heart rate. And apparently that happens within like a millisecond, where, you know, the brain, the eyes, everything, our sensory receptors are watching this group of people. And then the heart sends a signal instantly to the brain that says, that kind of triggers you who you want to connect with, you know, based, you could call it a vibe, right? Or an emotion, a feeling, but it's really another example, I think, of how the heart can really dictate how we connect with people.
They've done studies actually on where they've put people in front of a computer screen. And in this, and then they've been showing random pictures, and it could have been a happy picture or a horrible picture. So, and actually what they saw, because they had electrodes, EEG and EKG, whatever, in both the heart, and that what they saw was that what responded to the picture first was always the heart. And even more interestingly is that the heart responded a millisecond before the picture became visible. So wow. The heart somehow knew that because they could see if it was fear or if it's love that was created as a response in the heart. So what we now today know is that the heart is always our first respondent, and then it sends signals up to the brain, and then the brain communicates to the rest of the body.
Also, I think the idea that we have a gut reaction to something, there's signaling also is coming from our intestines, right?
Well, we have neural cells in our heart and our intestines. That's so cool. And we produce more serotonin in our intestines than in our brain. So, and that's also where I think science sometimes where I love science, but also science is trying to look at the brain only as a brain when we have heart and gut connected to the brain. And we today know that what we eat can actually mean that we get depressed.
Yeah.
But still we're trying to separate. So I think one of the greatest thing to really understand awe and wonder in that sense is to look at things holistically. Don't look at science. I mean, I think if I may go on a bit of a rant here, but I think sometimes that we are a bit of a confused species, and because we stop listening to ourselves, we want to call so-called experts and to explain everything, whether it's God or it's science. And we hope for miracles like a magic pill to help us. But at the same time, we mistreat our bodies and mind, and we're sicker than ever before. And we don't do the work necessary. So we've enslaved us to TV, food addiction, phones, and so forth. So I really feel that the world needs more wonder and awe, but the only way we can get wonder and awe is to really listen to our heart, to look at things more holistically, and not just look at things as parts, but look at everything as a whole.
Beautifully said. So it seems like, you know, people like to get a report, the efficacy from science that, like, you know, like when you're in love, there's serotonin's being released, you have an orgasm, there's all kinds of chemicals that are being released that are good for you. But artists have been, you know, singing about love and writing poems and music for thousands and thousands of years. So I concur with what you're saying. You know, I think listening to your own inner voice is you're always going to be your best guide.
Yeah, it's interesting that we need sometimes, I mean, I are slave to that. I have my Aura ring on to tell me how I slept, but actually I don't need a ring to tell me how to sleep. I can just feel it myself. We sometimes want, as you know, science to tell us that it's good to be in nature, but everyone knows since we were born that nature heals and we feel good to be in nature. It's great that science has shown that even watching nature like your films is having same benefits as being in nature, almost in the brain at least. So I think, but at the same time, we already know this. So I think we just have to go back to what do we know and connect with that innate knowledge that we have. And then we start seeing awe in so many things.
So being open-minded, when we spoke last, I think you told me what the real definition of the word Buddha means. Could you share that with us?
Well, I was told, and I haven't studied this, so don't quote me too much on it, but that many say that Buddha was awakened. But actually, Buddhism means that Buddha was open-minded. He was open, so he was open-minded. And actually, and we've spoken about it a couple of times, and I know that you're deeply interested in this, and I've done work on it with curiosity, is that curiosity is another word, I think, for open-minded, and it's also another way for creative mindset. Because when you're curious, and science and studies have showed that you cannot be depressed, you're actually more healthy when you're a curious person. The problem is that we're incredibly curious when we're born. Yeah, as you can see, any baby, I mean, they're curious about everything, how it tastes and what they do and they look and they're just lovely. But as we grow older, that curiosity just dwindles down and it goes further and further away. And what they've seen is that elderly people that are curious, they live longer, they have less disease, their cognitive function is a lot higher. They've even looked at, and they have more connection. And when you have more connection, you also live longer. So what they're seeing is that curiosity is almost one of those things that are the most important thing for being happy and healthy. And it kind of makes sense because when you're curious, you're also in this whole mindfulness journey that we are in right now is that we are not supposed to have judgment. But when you're curious, you actually have less judgment of whether Republican or Democrat is right, or vaccine or no vaccine is right, or this or that is right. It's more like, okay, I listen and I'm curious. And that makes all the difference because I do think that in this world today, we have way too much polarity of I'm right and you're right. And then we try to make our point. But if you're curious, you're more open. So I think Buddha and what this, it was actually Andrew Holicek, who is working with, written a book on dream yoga, said that what Buddha actually was, his essence was that he was curious. And he was curious to the point that he got enlightened.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I think it's like having a blank slate, you know, terra incognita, like a childlike wonder. And I know a lot of meditation practices try to get you there. In terms of being able to, like, you know, slow down and kind of have that blank slate. For me, I get to that blank slate just by staring at a flower. And I think Buddha actually did that right under the Bodhi tree, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, like, look at a flower and you will understand everything there is to know. That's the answer to all his disciples. So I'm still seduced by flowers, you know. I've been rolling nonstop time-lapse flowers for like 4 decades, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He gets me up in the morning. It's a practice, how to light them, how to compose for them, how to nurture them, how to care for them. It gives me something to do, but it also, you know, opens my mind because every flower is different and I don't know how it's going to open up. I don't know what the result is going to be like. And I do want to entertain that idea of childlike wonder.
So how did you get into mushrooms, Louis?
Probably in my college years, I was introduced to, I think, you know, cannabis, obviously, and then eventually, you know, experimented with, you know, mushrooms. But once that happened, it totally changed my life. I think it's changed all my filmmaking. I don't shoot things that are normal often. I.e. like 24 frames per second. That's like the human-centric point of view of life. I enjoy exploring the sense of wonder from the point of view of a flower, the point of view of a redwood tree, the point of view of a reptile, because you can almost equate frame rates, you know, 24 frames per second as well, how films are made, to metabolic rates. You know, a redwood tree can be here for 500 years and looks at us as if we're like a time-lapse ant. And the reciprocal would be true if you looked at a hummingbird, you know, that's like super high metabolic rate, yet can, you know, look at human beings probably as slow moving giants, you know? So I love the idea being able to really show people what that's like. And that's all been influenced certainly by a psychedelic journey where you bend time and scale and you let go of that, you know, time clock of narrow point of view, human-centric point of view of reality. It's great to be able to, I think also as a metaphor, step into someone else's shoes from a cultural perspective, from a compassionate perspective. What's it like to be somebody else? Let alone what's it like to be an animal or a tree or a flower. So I think it creates open-mindedness.
It does. I mean, yeah, I think, and what with the fantastic fungi, with everything being connected in such a, with the mycelium, is pretty awesome. It kind of shows how all of this works. And I just think that connectedness, I mean, every tree and plant is connected. So are we on Earth.
We're connected. People should realize that you're in Stockholm and I'm in LA. And what a miracle that is that we're talking to each other right now, right?
I still haven't figured out how the fax machine works. I guess it's not mine, but I still can't understand it. So no, it's pretty awesome that we can do this. And I think one thing that people also, and I kind of alluded to before, is that this thing with wellness is important. And we can see it today with everyone understanding that the best way we can have a happy and healthy life is to be well, to have a strong immune system. And everything is together. So if we have a weak mind, it doesn't matter how strong your body is. You need to have a strong, holistic body. So I think there's a couple of things that we've talked a lot about is that people need to return also, all of us, to the basics of wellness. We don't have to do all this biohacking and all these difficult things that I love to do, but it's about being in nature every day. It's about exercising 30 minutes a day. They've actually shown, NASA has shown when they've looked at their what makes people as young as possible, because they, for them, the astronauts need to be as healthy and as young as long as possible. And when they've done studies, they've seen two things that are of utter importance. And that is one, to exercise 30 minutes a day. And that doesn't mean that you need to run. You can walk brisk, you can do yoga, but you have to get the blood flowing 30 minutes. And the second one is muscle mass. You need, the more muscle mass you have, the more protected your all the ligaments and aches and pains are, but also the more oxygen you pump around the body and the more you metabolize, and therefore you don't get overweight, because that's another thing. But I would say to exercise, to hydrate, to be in nature, to find some kind of mindfulness practice, whether that is to study a flower or to sit on a pillow, and also to hydrate, of course, as much as one can, as you're doing right now. But these are the basics. If we could just do that and not feed ourselves with toxins in the same kind. I've read the other day that our sperm count, or men's sperm count, has gone down the past, I think it was 30 years, with 40% because of all the chemicals. And actually, penis sizes has shrunk too. The same way. And they are predicting, I can't remember how long it was, in 30 or 50 years, that sperm count can be down to zero. Means that we can't almost reproduce. So again, not feeding too much chemicals and all these things and trying to do those basic things is more than enough. One doesn't have to do all these elaborate stuff. So I think that's also a very important message from me to everyone is that you really don't have to reinvent, like do all these super cool, stand upside down in a cryotherapy with infrared stuff happening. I mean, you can do it. I love it. But do the basics. And if everyone would do that, we would not be where we are right now, actually.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you a question, like any recommendations you have for people coming out of this pandemic? I think you basically just laid it out. But is there anything you'd like to add in addition, given that we're probably going to face a global mental wellness, you know, hurdle?
I do. I mean, I think, and also there's another, a lady called Marissa Pierce, actually, who has a wonderful way of that you have to accept. You have to really, you can work with yourself to accept the situation, whatever has happened. And as we've come across, so I think a really important thing is acceptance and surrender to what has happened. Because if you try to fight it and judge it and say they did wrong, we did right. So I think that is a huge important. I would say what I would do, and I have done, and I am actually on up until in about 45 minutes from now, I'm going to eat my first meal in 3 days. So I've done a 3-day complete fast with water or tea. That's why I'm drinking so much, because I'm so thirsty or hungry. But to do a
That's
detox.
A miracle. I mean, you are, you know, if I hadn't eaten for 3 days, I don't think I'd be having this lively conversation.
Well, I would say, I mean, actually my partner, he's doing it for the first time, and he's like you, he needs food. So he says, I'm not sure I'm going to survive. But it is fine. But with a 3-day complete fast, you're actually, the science has shown, you actually reset your immune system. It's like hitting the restart business button of your computer. So to do a both mental and physical, and often you can also do soul through a fire ceremony, to do a detox. And a fire ceremony is basically where you write something down on a piece of paper that you want to get rid of. It could be a habit, it could be something that's happened, or someone who's disturbing, or a person or whatever that you don't want in your life. And you give that paper to a candle, and the fire is very rapid transformation. So that type of detox on several levels, on both mental, emotional, spiritual, as well as physical, I think coming out of this pandemic, it's like setting a reset and looking at, what do we do now? Because if we look, it's almost like the world has been divided in two camps. Those that are reactive and angry and been inside their box. Others that might be inside in, but they've become creative. They've started new businesses. They've looked at new ways of doing things. They've found and figured out stuff that they would have never had. There are silver lining with this as well. So those come into the creative mindset. So coming out of this pandemic, apart from being in nature, and people have got a renewed love for nature, which is lovely with this pandemic. But I think on all levels, detox is a quite important factor to just do a reset and look at, okay, my life is like this. I accept it. What am I going to do now? And what do I need to change? And how am I going to live it? I think those are really important things, because we're not going to go back. There is no going back. We can only go forward. So we have to take this and put this in as every hardship has been in our history, in our life, that's when we grow and learn.
Mm-hmm. That's well said. I think that we don't want to go back to normal for sure, because normal had a lot of starvation, a lot of eco, you know, damage to the planet. I think that in part lowered the immune system of the planet, and vectors like pandemics occur when you stress things out. Anytime an ecosystem can no longer maintain the species that are on it, viruses appear, pandemics appear, in order to create balance. That is nature's operating instruction. So there is certainly a deep lesson to be learned from what we're going through.
Another really interesting thing that I just want to add also is something that's on a lot of people's minds today. And that's electromagnetic fields in EMF, like the dirty electricity, the 5G, we've heard about it, Wi-Fi. And our Earth is in balance. But then we've come in, and then we have all these grid lines. We're a magnetic field, so you have grid lines going from various directions. And we know them as Curie and Hartman lines. So that causes geopathic stress. And now we got electricity. And we got a lot of electricity and Wi-Fi that causes stress. And that's, again, one can't take it away. And we love it. And that's why you and I can speak today. But you can live in balance. So there's a lot of science and older science out there, such as biogeometry, where you can find ways on how you can take away the waves that you have, especially the vertical waves of an electric. The vertical waves, which is the same in an electric wave, you have horizontal and you have vertical. The verticals are what are harmful. Vertical is X-rays, it's just pure vertical waves. So there are ways also when we talk about the environment, because this electricity onslaught that we're having right now is not good for us unless we find ways to live with it in balance. And the ancient Egyptians and everyone else has done this for years. All our homes were built on these grid lines and as per our Earth and in balance up until about 150 years ago. So I would say there are ways to mitigate, to live in harmony with the electric and the 5G and everything. And there are some systems. The ones that I've seen so far be the absolute best is something called biogeometry that is based on physical radiesthesia, the old ancient system. But I just think for when we talk about wellness and environment and sperm counts and other things, is that, and it also nature for mushrooms to grow and everything else, we need to live in balance with the energy systems, and we're just onslaughting energy system right now. So for anyone listening to this, I would highly recommend to look at biogeometry, because it's they have several solutions that you can put in to neutralize the harmful electric waves in your homes.
Wow. Well, one thing I have observed, there's no such thing as a straight line or a right angle in nature.
No, it's interesting. And if you see, those trees that grow like this, so you have those, you suddenly have all these straight trees, and then suddenly one goes like that. That's because one of those lines come and they want to avoid it. So the root might be there, and then they go past it a bit. So you can also see how everything grows in nature, how those geopathic stress and lines has affected how they chose to grow. So that's also another way to understand where the lines goes.
Talk to me a little bit about this. I know you've been working with Dr. Albert Villotto about growing a new body. What does that mean? Can you explain that?
Yes. Well, Alberto Villoldo is the shaman that I've studied under, and we just met for a couple of hours, and we became really connected straight away. That thing that we talked about, where you just like instantly get connected. And he's been out studying with in the Amazons for years and years and years, and apparently he had parasites all in his body from all his travels to very strange places. And his liver was failing, so they said, you need a liver transplant. And he had a plane to jump on. He could either go to Miami to get a liver transplant, or to the Amazons and do deep healing through psychedelics and other things to really understand. So he chose, obviously, to go to the Amazons. Now, this Alberto has written books with Professor Perlmutter, who's one of our most famous neuroscientist, as well as Dr. Mark Hyman, that he developed this Grow a New Body. And it's really the most full system of how do you actually, he grew a new liver, and he didn't then need a transplant. And he did that through physical, looking at going into ketosis, doing fasting, and resetting that whole system. I would say is that when he ate, he didn't eat any refined food, only vegetables and fat, more or less. So a very, and then he also worked with a number of therapies, and of course then shaman and indigenous therapists, to really take away, so you take away the harmful energies you have in your body physically, and then you also work with them emotionally through yoga and meditation, and then mentally, in the same way. And then you also add the soul and the spirit by having shamans work on you together with not in the official program with psychedelics, but that way you can literally grow a new body. And there are so many ways today, and scientists have seen when it comes to longevity, is that there are certain longevity genes, they're called sirtuins or mTORs. And doing interventions in all of these levels, such as fasting and ketosis and supplementation, like glutathione and NAD and M&Ms and other things, that those are things that can stimulate these longevity genes. So you can repair your systems, you can grow a new body, and you literally can become younger instead of older. So I think that, and these programs, I've done it twice, and he does one every year together with Dr. Mark Hyman as well, which is almost the father of functional medicine. And we're going to have them in our Six Senses this year, because he usually has them in Chile, but he's going to have them one in Ibiza and three in Bodrum in Kaplankaya in Turkey, and this year, because we started to work with him, and he found that, okay, because people can't travel to Chile the same way, he's going to take them there. But it is the most complete wellness spiritual program I've ever experienced in my life, and it's meant for me personally, tremendous healing, and shedding of things that I didn't even know I had almost, because they go in at such a deep level with the practices that are there. So I would say the Grow a New Body is really looking at increasing your health span and lifespan, and also ridding yourself of a lot of garbage through food and movement and nature and energy medicine and many other things.
I know there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley that are like trying to hack the idea of dying. Do you think that someday, I mean, is that a valid pursuit? I mean, is death inevitable, or is it potentially something that maybe someday could be eliminated?
I think death is, because aging is a disease. We don't have to age, so we don't actually have to die. Now, the problem we have right now is that we don't want to live till we're 200 if we're going to live on the premises that we're doing today. The last 10 to 30 years of our life is sick and fragile, and we're kind of giving some life support of pills, but we're not enjoying life. And when I finally die, people are probably going to say, fine, it's so good that you finally got to die. And that's not the premises we want to live. So we want to live in the premises that we can live forever, but we can be healthy. So I think, I don't know if we want to live forever, because I don't know, even if I'm super healthy and can move around and I'm 250 years old, but who knows? The notions that we can live forever is certainly there. And aging is a disease. It's not something that must happen to us. We make ourselves age once we've come to a certain age of, I think, believe 25. So we don't have to age, so we can live forever. On the other hand, the question is also, having worked with a lot of, however strange to sound, with dead people, is that it's pretty nice to die, and the other side is also nice. And I think that it's, you have this life on earth, we want to make it, maximize it and make it so good, but it's not a bad thing to die either, because we have a pretty sweet journey ahead of us when we transform to a different energy. And what I've understood from my own experience, as well as everyone else's that I sometimes talk to, is that it's actually a much nicer place to be in.
So as a pioneer, what do you think is going to happen when you die?
Oh, what happens when I die? Well, I went up to I did some neurofeedback at 40 Years of Zen, that's Dave Asprey's, in Seattle a couple of years ago. And then because I died and I laid in coma when I was 14, and I didn't know what happened from when I went into that death tunnel until I woke up a week later or something. So I used neurofeedback to go back to that moment and really see what happens, and understand that we are truly just light. We're light beings. That's all we are. And how we're enormous amount of light that are squeezed into a physical body. So it's almost like we're squeezed into a suit, and that gets released. And when we are on the other side, I would say we are completely free of all the physical ailments in our physical body. We are connected and we're one. We're one, even though we're individuals, but we're all part of the one. So we, like birds, you move, you're individual, but you move together. And you live in, you don't have duality, you only have unity. So I think that is, after you die, you go into some kind of unity where there's only love and light, and you're strong, and you can also help and support all our living beings to be, even help us to become more in love and light than less than in fear, I would say. So for me, I think you transcend into the soul continues and the body dissolves into earth again, and we go into another dimension and basically are light and love.
Wow. Well, that's a better story than organized religion, that's for sure, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they would say about this right now, but let's hope they accept this as well.
Yeah. I love laying down in the forest, and just, I get this overwhelming feeling of being at home, and it's comforting. If it's anything like that, then I'm all for it.
I would say when I died, and I've heard almost everyone else who died say the same thing, is the immense form of bliss. And having done all kinds of psychedelics you can think of in every way possible, almost, there is nothing that has come up to that feeling in that moment of complete, total, perfect bliss. I mean, I would almost die again. I don't want to die again. I mean, I will, but just to have that feeling. And I've understood that everyone has that. It is the most blissful, expanded, beautiful experience ever. And it was absolutely amazing. Everything was more than perfect. It was beyond perfect. So I think that is something. I mean, I think it was just an explosion of DMT, but probably other substances that we've ever heard of.
Do you think your soul, I mean, reincarnates as, in any form, that feeling of, well, I guess it goes counter to the idea of connectedness, of this thing of individuality, but this, is the soul an individual thing or not?
The soul is part of a collective, as we are part of a collective, but we choose before we become in human form what lessons we need and what journey we need to grow our soul. That's my belief, personal belief, is that so we choose our life path, we choose our parents, we choose whatever hardship we go through because that's how our soul grows and develop. And but I think the soul is a part of the one, and then we're just a fraction when we come in into that. So each of our souls are there, but we're all connected in a very different way that I don't think our brain can comprehend. I know that when I've done ayahuasca, actually, I've asked spirit to show me what life is really beyond death, but it is too complicated for me to understand when you get our brains can't. So I kind of asked, okay, this is too much. I need to get out of it because it's too psychedelic, it's too strange. So I think we can't really comprehend it, but it sure is something that we will understand. So I think we're part of all this, but we choose our journey on Earth, and we should be grateful for that journey, even with all the hardships that we go through, because we're supposed to have this experience, and we're exactly where we should be.
Do you have a practice around gratitude?
I do. I'm grateful a lot. I mean, I try to every morning I wake up, and it's not easy because I'm not good in the mornings, and so I need coffee before even waking up. But I try to think about what I'm grateful for, and every night when I go to bed, I think about A, what I'm grateful for, and what I want the dreams to heal for me. But that, and then during the day, I try to look at things because the small things in life, if I see a flower, I look at it and try to stop and say, wow, that's beautiful, and be grateful for that. Or if I see something. So I have a trying to train my brain to stop and smell the roses, so to speak. But every morning and every evening, I know one should write down, and I've tried. But for me, it's enough if I just think it and say it aloud. And I also practice a lot of metta in my meditation. Metta is where you basically say, may all beings be happy. And then you also receive that back in the sense. So paying it forward is like gratitude as well, that comes back tenfold to yourself. And so I always talk about may all beings be happy, and I can include people in the prayers that are suffering. And those type of things is also a form of gratitude or sending love, and it comes back from them as well. So I think there's a couple of different practices, but definitely just think about those small things. I don't have to think, I mean, I'm grateful for my kids, but I can't say that every day. So I need to think of the small things. And I think that's the most important thing. So every morning, every evening, and as many times during the day, and especially if I'm angry or severe about anything, I need to kind of think about I should be grateful. And that doesn't always help, but it could.
It helps me a lot too. I mean, whenever I get down, it's a go-to, resource for me to be able to pull out that gratitude card and say, well, I'm happy that I got five fingers at work. I'm happy that I'm breathing. I mean, there's all these little things you can automatically always be grateful for, And even when I look back at, what my parents went through as, Holocaust survivors, I go, oh my God, I have all what I'm whatever I'm going through is nothing compared to what they went through. That's one of the things that kicks my butt and moves me forward, not to feel sorry for myself, not to feel like a victim, not to feel angry, is to be able to, pull myself out of that negative spiral.
And I think the research and science is solid on gratitude, as you know. with that, how it changes our synapses in the brain and how it changes. And just by being grateful, we can change the whole outlook of a whole day. So I think gratefulness is, I mean, I'm super grateful to have you as a friend, to have learned about Fantastic Fungi, to be part of the Wonder and Awe podcast, and for me talking to you today. And that kind of makes my day.
Wow. Well, it makes my day as well. So, Anna, thank you so much for taking us on a real journey through time and scale. We went all the way from light energy to what happens when we die and everything in between, which I think is a beautiful thing to cover in less than an hour. So I'm really grateful for that. I don't want to keep you from having a dinner in Stockholm where I'm just ready to have my lunch. Another great example of the connectedness of everything. But I really appreciate you. I really love you. And I love the fact that you've helped so many people heal. You've created a business that is focused on healing and wellness. So it ripples out probably beyond the borders that you'll ever imagine, how many people you've touched. So it's been an honor to have this conversation with you.
Well, thank you, Louis. And I love you too. And I'm just very grateful to be able to build all these resorts and other things and systems and practices that people can actually get a more optimized life from. So thank you for helping part of that. And that what you do is just amazing. And I can't tell you, when I put on your movies with my kids, they're just mesmerized and they love them. And it's just something. So your gift to the world is absolutely fantastic. So love you loads.
Well, love right back at you. You've manifested physical properties into being that feeling of love and wellness and comfort and bliss. That's what I think people experience when they go to the properties that you've, you know, put your magic touch on. So you're manifesting it in the world. You chose to be here in this time and place. You're on a mission and you're doing it. So I love it. I really love it and respect it. So thank everybody for joining me on this podcast. It's been really terrific. We've journeyed everywhere from inner space to outer space and everything in between. So I'm really grateful for that. So I want to thank my team at Moving Art, Sarah and Leland and Courtney and Annie and the folks at Magical Threads. Thank you so much for helping put this, you know, podcast together. When it rains, it pours. So enjoy your dinner in Stockholm, okay?
I will.
Love you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.